Los Angeles. You're now tuned into Slauson Girl Speaks
with award-winning journalist and South Central native, Slauson Girl.
This is a safe space.
Yeah!
Celebrating authentic black expression.
Where Slauson Girl dives deep
into Los Angeles history,
politics, and news.
While discussing culture, race, and identity with carefully curated guests
to keep you open-minded in today's society.
No cap.
Follow Slauson Girl on all social media platforms and stream Slauson Girl Speaks on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
You don't want to miss this.
DS Bros Electronics has you covered for all your in-home electronic needs. From TV mount installs to soundbar installations, in-wall wiring, as well as security system installs. DS Bros Electronics is a local family-owned business in LA, ready to assist you with your home services. They provide high-quality service and professional customer service. Contact them today at 323-230-0290 or visit them online at dsbros.tv, and that's Diaz with a Z. And don't forget to tell them that Slauson Girl sent you.
Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Laura Knight, who is the daughter of Rodney King. She is also the CEO of the Rodney King Foundation, which is a nonprofit she founded to continue her father's legacy and message. In the words of Rodney King, with so much continued turmoil in the world, from police brutality, gangs, and mass shootings, as well as inner city violence, can't we all just get along? Laura, how are you today?
I'm unstoppable. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I like that. And definitely, thank you so much for your time and thank you for coming. And I mean, you know, when people hear of you, you know, they're going to associate you with your father, of course, you know, but for those who do not know you, the person, who would you say that Laura Knight is?
I would say Laura is just what I just said, unstoppable. So in spite of what I'm feeling, in spite of what's going on, you still have to keep going.
Right.
Every day, no matter what. And I like to think of our ancestors are dependent on this moment. We have this moment. They suffered for us to have this moment. So who am I to, you know, dwell in any of those thoughts? I can use that same passion, same pain, and push forward.
That part. Okay. So I definitely want to touch on, you know, something that was such a pivotal. Why am I putting the whole B up in pivotal?
You got
it's crazy. Something that was such a pivotal moment in Black Los Angeles history, which was the 92 riots, subsequent the verdict of, you know, what happened to your father, as well as what had happened to Latasha Harlings. You know, all of those energies intertwined, bubbled into the 92 riots, you know. I was actually born a few months after that.
Oh, you're a baby.
In September, you know.
Uh-huh.
How old were you during that time?
I was 7 when my father was beaten, and I was 8 during the riots. Yep.
What do you remember most from that time?
You know, it's crazy because when my father was beaten, we lived in Montclair, California. And then shortly after, a couple months after that, we moved to 55th and Western, which is, the heart of South Central. And it was like night and day for me because, those of us who from L.A., we know that Montclair and L.A. is totally different. So it was a complete culture shock because our liquor store had been burned down. Like me and my sister were walking to the store and then next thing you know, it was no store. Like it was literally in flames. And that was like, it was all bad over there. Mm-hmm. It was pretty different.
Mm-hmm. So what had influenced the family's decision to move from Montclair to South Central?
You know, it was crazy because right after that happened to my dad, people were calling, like KKKs, all kind of stuff, calling the house. So we moved a lot. Like right after that happened to my dad, we moved like continuous. I went to 5 elementaries, 2 middle schools. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was pretty. Yeah, we moved a lot.
And so kind of like describe to us your family unit during this time.
You know, it was pretty different because as the whole world, like everybody was glued to the TV watching this verdict, you know, every day. This was an ongoing thing. So even as a kid, even if you wanted to escape, you couldn't because everywhere you went, they were watching it in their house. So it was pretty different.
Mm-hmm. How many siblings do you have?
It's 3 of us. So I'm mm-hmm. a middle child. I have an older sister. She's 39 and I'm 37. And I have a baby sister. She is 28.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So during this time, were you all kind of like leaning on each other, kind of like for support? Did you guys really understand the dynamic of what was happening?
You know, we didn't because this was new for everybody. Like I said, this was something that never took place before. So it was like, wait, what's going on? Mm-hmm. My younger sister, she wasn't born yet. She was born maybe like 2 years after the riots. But my older sister and myself, same thing. It was like, it was much different. And then we went to public school. I went to LAUSD. Mm-hmm. So it was no joke. It was no joke.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So how was your dad like responding to all of this during this time?
You know, it's crazy. My dad was never the same, even though, God forbid, he didn't die that night. A big, huge part of him died that night that we never got back. I want to say mentally, emotionally, he very much checked out. And of course, they didn't offer him any mental support, any kind of mental support. So I think anybody in their right mind would never be the same after this. Like, that's something that you never change from, let alone it's something that's super, you know, that's a different kind of trauma. And it's like, people expect you to be normal after that. And there's no such thing as normal. Even if you had the proper help, I know for me, I was never normal and I'm still not normal. So I can imagine what my dad went through. But he was the type of person, he didn't want like everybody around him to feel what he was feeling. So he would like liven up the party. He was like a, you know, happy-go-lucky person. But I knew oftentimes when he was in pain, which is very often, because he would make like facial expressions. You know, as far as his body, he was like always in pain, like more times than others. So that was kind of hard to deal with because I knew he would be in pain and he'd be like trying to fight it. And it's like, the same with permanent brain damage. You know, he was diagnosed with permanent brain damage, and that affects everything about a person. It's not just one part. It's like that's a big part of who you are that affects your everything, you know, mentally, emotionally, the things that you do, say. So it was kind of a lot to deal with, honestly. I just felt bad for him because I know how I deal with life now. And the older I get, the more I realize, like when I'm having a bad day or something like that, and I can go out in public. But just imagine people like that, that things happen to them that is out of their control. You know, that was out of his control. So I think about things like that, and I'm just like, dang, how did he really cope with life? You know, it's like, eh.
So let's talk about your dad before this happened to him. Okay. What do you remember most about your dad?
I definitely say he was a happy-go-lucky, super spontaneous person. Pretty much life of the party. I definitely say that.
And what kind of effect would you say that this incident had on him?
You know, I definitely say it suppressed him. Like he would go into depression a lot. Like he would go be quiet in his own personal space a lot. Definitely. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So did your dad ever talk to you about like his upbringing at all? Like what his life was like when he was younger?
He didn't, but other people did. Mm-hmm. And my grandfather suffered from alcoholism and he just had his own suffering. And I know for sure when my dad was in high school, my grandfather was a janitor. So he would take my dad at night. So my dad wouldn't get in till like 3-4 in the morning and still would have to go to school.
Oh, wow.
So that was like, I know that took a toll on him because he couldn't concentrate in school. So it was like a lot, you know, to process.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Did your dad ever talk about like plans that he had for himself or that he wanted to do?
I know he wanted to write a book. I know that he wasn't happy with the book that was out right before he passed. And I know that was like a super big effect on him, but he just did it just to just get it over with. I know that he would go to high schools and middle schools and parks and donate money and uniforms, whatever he can give back, because he knows what it's like to not to be without, you know. Mm. I definitely know that he enjoyed that.
Okay, definitely. Yeah. So did your dad expect the verdict that happened following his beating?
No, not at all. That was a shock for him. And it hurt his feelings, because it's like you as a person, you just know for sure if it's on video. And what are the chances that's only the grace of God? What are the chances that somebody videotapes that, let alone who has videotapes back then? Like, nobody had videotapes. And it's crazy because often people wonder, why did he run? Well, he ran because he knew that was going to happen. This was normal behavior for the police. You know, he was from Altadena, where they took guys up there all the time and they would do whatever they do to them. Some of them would never come back again. So he tried to go to a well-lit area. At least if something happens, someone can see or something can, you know, whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
Not justifying it, because I don't think he should have ran, but I understand. I understand from a Black man's position what they go through.
Right. So how does it feel for you? You know, we're here in 20, I guess we have to go back to like 2013, you know, we start 2012, like during the height of social media, when we're seeing these continuous like beatings and
right.
killings of Black people now because we all have cell phones, you know?
Right.
Like, what was that like for you?
You know, it's still, I won't even say like, it still is, and I won't even say low-key depressing. It's very depressing because here we are. We're still in the same situation. And yet, and still, we've developed so far from that videotape until where we are now, clear as day. And the only reason that I'm hopeful is because more people are speaking out for us.
Mm-hmm.
Because now there's more interracial people. There's more people that speak up for Black people, which at the end of the day is still sad because we're still here. And it's like these type of things are always justified, but you can't justify taking a human life. You're not, right. You know, you're not God to make that decision.
Right.
So it's just like, it's just like depressing for me
mm-hmm.
that they break down. And then another thing, they break down African-American men's character.
Right.
Oh, he was on drugs. He was. This. And that night, my dad was not. They tested him. Yes, he was high off weed. He did drink. And I'm not justifying that. But he was celebrating because he had just got a construction job.
Hey.
He just got a construction job that was like a great position. So again, I'm not justifying what he did, but I'm just saying his character was pretty much broken down. Oh, he was this and that. And he was moving radically. Well, if I'm hit over 50 times, if I'm tased over numerous of times, I'm blood and sweat and soaking in my own blood, I'm going to run too. I'm going to run for my life. I'm not going to sit there. And I don't get it, you know? And then here it is. George Floyd was literally begging. That man begged for his life, and his life was still taken. So my question is, who are we? I'll say we, because this is America and we're all here. Who are we to take somebody's life because of the color of their skin? So it just lets me know, how ignorant are you? If that's your only reason for doing what you did, that's your only reason.
Right. Very ignorant. It's a lot of them running around.
All right, Raymond, you got to roll out.
What's wrong? Cocoa melon. You're like, I'm ready to go.
Okay. So,
you want me to hold you?
You can hold.
This is my son. He's 2. His name is Raymond Ramel Rodney Price.
Oh, hello. How old is he?
He's 2. He just turned 2 last month.
Oh, wow.
Yep. He just turned 2 last month.
Okay. We had to bring him on camera, you know, for his cameo shot. But yeah, so let's talk a little bit about your foundation.
Sure.
So you founded the Rodney King Foundation. Mm-hmm. Talk to us a little bit about what your inspiration was behind starting it.
I would definitely say pain. I worked at an accounting firm for 10 years. I was doing that before my dad passed. And then I was actually going to Skid Row twice a month feeding the homeless. And my dad was living at the time. And he didn't want me spending my own money. He'd get pissed off. Like, what are you doing? Start a foundation. I was like, I don't want to do all that. I don't want to go through all that. Mm. And so he was like, don't spend your own money doing this, dude. So after he died, I was like, dang, I could not think of what I would do to honor him. And I was like, you know what? So my mom got cancer shortly after that. And sorry. I moved jobs closer. I moved to Long Beach. I worked at that place for 3 weeks and it was torture. And at the accounting firm, they told me, you're going to hate it. Attorneys are the worst. I'm like, I get along with everybody. It's going to be fine. It was really bad. This one particular lady, she was really something else. So I took out my 401k. When they told me that check came, I took out all my quotes off the walls because that's what I tried to get me through. Mm-hmm. That still didn't work. I walked out. And I did the foundation since then. And then I went through a depression for like 7 years. My dad's been gone 9 years. I went through a really hard depression and I stopped everything. I would just go to work, go home, go work. And then I was like, it dawned on me. My dad treated us like we were boys. Like, he talked to us like boys. He didn't talk to us like girls. Hmm. So I had to like really think to myself, like, are you going to sit here and spiral down in your emotions? Are you going to use that pain to push you? Hmm. Because people need to hear that you can help somebody. Hold on. You know what? I'm over you. Oh my God, Raymond. Let's see here, buddy. But basically, I was just like, people are suffering because you're silent. So you can either spiral down in your emotions or you can use your pain to push you forward. But whatever you do, you have to keep going.
Right.
And so I just knuckled up, started everything over, and I literally... talking. I know what. Here. There it is. So I basically just chose to, regardless of the fact, still keep going because I know what it's like to need clothes. I know what it's like to need something to wear to an interview. I know what it's like to need money, food. I know all that. I know firsthand. And I know that, to some people that may be the world. And that helps me with my grieving with my dad, because I would watch him. He would have us go sit in front of McDonald's and pass out coupons to people. And I'd be like, oh gosh. But as an adult, I get it. The older I get, the more I realize that, that may be nothing to you, but to somebody else, that may be the world. And that helps me with grieving because I haven't gone to therapy. My dad, he's been gone 9 years and I still like realistically can't look at his picture for longer than 5 seconds without like, I can't look at interviews with him. Like, of course, when I do interviews, they'll the can we get along thing. But as far as him like walking, talking day to day, I can't process it. I think I did it twice in 9 years and it was all bad. So this helps me. Like, this helps me. Plus, helping people helps you more than you realize it. And people that help people, they know exactly what I mean when I say that.
Okay. So how has the experience been like for you having the foundation?
It's interesting because a lot of people didn't even know my dad had kids. So they're like, wait, what? I'd say one thing that's super dear to my heart is the I Am King Scholarship. And that basically highlights African-American men. It basically sums it up to fund them out on a date with their children. And then I wanted to highlight them because the media does the opposite. They're like, Black men are upset. Black men are, you know, all this stuff they say. And I'm like, I know plenty of great dads. I know plenty of, and I'm not just singling out African-American men, but I feel like the media does the opposite for them. So therefore, it's my job to put them on the pedestal because they are important and we need them. I can speak because I'm a mother. A man's position is a father's position is way more important than a mother's position because they're the foundation. You know, they're a girl's first love. They're a boy's first example.
Right.
And they're the head of the house. But oftentimes the media and everything else does the opposite to break them down. So I feel like it's so much pressure on them. We got the, not saying we got the good end of the stick, but we got more of a opportunity. They don't. So I feel like my goal was to do like at least 2,500 per person, but I can't afford that. So when I do it, it's 500. Mm-hmm. And I feel bad for that too. But that's often only what I'm able to raise at the time. But it's better than nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just to let them go spend quality time with their kid, whatever they decide to do.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have to take care out of rent. They don't have to take care of their bills. And then that's something that it instills like self-esteem in a kid. Because it's like, you know, when your dad or your parent is out at your game and you see them, you're going to work a little harder. You know? So it's like quality time with your dad is like super dope.
Right. Yeah, I agree. So how can people help to support the I Am King Scholarship Fund?
They can go to RodneyKing.org and donate. They can sign up for our newsletter. They can reach out to us. They can come. Like, I do actually. I haven't done one since April, but realistically, every month I do food drives. I do Compton Watch, Long Beach, the Watts Projects. And slang hope. You know what I mean? Because we're all going through something. We're all going through something. So it's my job to help somebody. That helps me help people.
Mm. So you talked about, you know, going through years of depression following your father's death, but also, you know, finding solace and the foundation and things like that, you know. What are some of the ways that you stay grounded and where were some of like the places that you found like the most peace during your grieving process?
That's a great question. I'm glad you asked that. You know, it's crazy. When I was a little girl, my dad used to work out like crazy. He'd be spinning in the den. He'd be working out for hours in his whole gym. And I'd be like, what the hell is wrong with him? Why is he doing that? And literally, I want to say about 14 years ago, before he passed, I got into working out.
Mm-hmm.
Weightlifting and just working out. And I see why he did it. It's my go-to. It's my place that, and it's crazy because I wouldn't put it in. It don't even have anything to do with looks. That's a place that you can go and you don't have to think and it helps you. Chill out, kid. Once you get in the habit of working out, it becomes your daily life. It's mm-hmm. like smoking a cigarette or having a drink. It's like, oh, I need this. And it ties into mental state. Mm-hmm. When you work out consistently, it ties into your mental state. It allows you clarity.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say working out. I'd say poetry. I'd say writing. And I definitely, more than anything, I'd say God. Because there's moments that nobody can help you. That's only something between you and God. And till you die, that's somebody that will be there. And he doesn't judge you. And yet and still you can turn to him.
Hmm.
So I definitely see God. And whatever people's, oh my God. Whatever your go-to, whatever your God is, I'd say that. You know, we all have different, whoever we turn to, Buddha, Allah. I say whatever it is, as long as you're not killing nobody.
Right.
I'm all for it.
Right.
Okay.
So you have your son here. You also have a 14-year-old daughter.
Yeah, I do. She's going to high school. Lord, take me now.
Oh, wow. So how has it been being a mother?
You know, it's crazy. It's interesting because my dad, my daughter didn't know who my dad was till after he died. She just knew him as who he was. Grandpa, he would help her. He would do arts and craft with her. They would do, you know, he gave her a computer, things like that. So I was watching Oprah one day, the segment. I tried to watch it at least. And she seen him on the TV and she's like, wait, that looks like Grandpa, but it kind of doesn't. I had to explain to her what happened. You know, it was just like a lot to process, but it was a lot because she snuck and did a report on my dad without telling me. And then she told me at the day it was due. And I was like, wait, where'd you get your information? You know, it was just like a lot to process. But I think the thing that I cherish the most is my daughter didn't find out who he was from the media or Google. She built her own relationship. So to me, that held, for his case, you know, he's two, so he will just unfortunately have to learn about who my dad was from everybody else in the media. But my daughter, I'm glad that she knew who her grandpa was firsthand. So that's something that's really, that means like a lot to me. Mm-hmm. And okay. Of course, he's a household name. So everywhere you go, everywhere, you know, that's something that you can't, they're not going to be able to escape that.
Right.
And so that's something that you really have to, mentally, you have to be at a different place to process it. Otherwise, it's like, wait, this is too much to process.
Okay. So, do people react to you differently in public when they find out that you're...
They do. It's either, or, oh. I mean, you know, it just depends on... It really depends on the individual and how they process him. So that's how they... Like my old job, I didn't tell anybody. I worked there for 10 years. I think I told them, maybe I actually didn't tell them. 3 years after I worked there, he had got shot in the face. And I didn't know what happened. I was like walking the mall on my lunch break. And all I heard was he got shot in the face. It was with a BB gun, but they didn't say that at the time. So I was like hysterical, went back, like devastated. And so my boss put two and two together. She came in the room like, is your dad Rodney King? I'm crying hysterically. I'm like, yeah. She's like, he's okay. You know, I'm like, oh, I have to go home. I got to go home. So that's how they found out. So it's weird because I was the only Black person that worked there for a good 8 years. And they were different because after, you know, I was still working there at the time when he passed and they helped me raise money. They did a lot. And I remember one particular partner telling me, we're helping you. He really specified that. Like, we're really helping you. Basically, he was saying, like, he doesn't condone who my dad is. He doesn't, in so many words. You know, people often help someone because they like that particular person. I said, well, I appreciate it. But I knew what he meant by that. And I was just like, dang. You know, it's weird. But at the end of the day, a part of who I am comes from my dad. So... You know, at the end of the day, hey, do what you want to do. But it was just interesting. It's just always interesting to people's point of view and how they do react. Always interesting. That's a great question because people do. People act different depending on what they feel about my dad.
Right.
Or what they think or what they think he had. Or right. It's always interesting. It's very interesting. People's point of view and like how they basically interact with you once they find out. But of course I hate attention, so other people always say it for me. So by the time I go where I'm going, it's like you hear all these whispers like, oh, that's so-and-so, that's so-and-so, so-and-so. So then it's like whatever. I've grown to accustom because it's my whole life, like since I was 7, so I'm used to it now.
Okay, so you know, your father's famous "Can we all get along?" line, you know, I'm sure is a common reference point that you hear a lot. But in your opinion, like, what do you think it would take for us to all get along?
I definitely think uncomfortable conversations and intimate conversations, not just the how's the weather out there, where do you live? I think conversations that we're able to grow from, because sometimes people are not racist. They're just uneducated. But a lot of the times they are. But they also have to be willing to have an open mind. And a lot of people are basically conditioned to generational curses, what I'd like to think. So they don't really have their own mind. They're going by their grandparents and their grandparents and their grandparents, rather than stating, you know, having your own mind, getting to know a person. We also do backpack drives. Like next month, we'll actually be doing a backpack drive in the San Pedro Projects.
Okay.
And we'll be giving out shoes and art supplies. We do that every year, as well as turkey drive, toy drives. Every year, just because I know what it's like to not get nothing on Christmas, and I know what it's like to not have a turkey.
Definitely. So, are you open to like partnering with or collaborating with different organizations for these backpack drives and things like that?
I am. Oftentimes, I do. But yeah, I'm pretty much open. I'm pretty much open. Okay. And like I said, at the end of the day, everybody has their own belief. I don't care what you believe or anything like that. As long as you're willing to help, I'm all for it. Like, I don't pass judgment. Again, I'm not God. I'm all open. I'm very much open. Yep. Okay.
All right. And so, do you have a set date yet for the backpack drive?
It is. It's August 20th.
August 20th. At the San Pedro Projects. Yep. Do we have a time?
I'm going to start at 10 a.m.
Okay.
Yep, we'll be starting at 10 a.m. And we'll be giving out shoes, backpacks, school supplies.
Okay. Definitely. Definitely want to talk to you about the verdict of Derek Chauvin. Did you think that he would have received a guilty verdict, considering what happened with your dad's case?
You know what's crazy? I went through so many emotions, and I'm still suffering to this day because of that, because that happened. And I shouldn't have watched that video, but I did. I definitely was surprised by it. But my thing is now, is he going to actually do the time? Because again, the officers were finally convicted in my dad's case, but they did camp time. They did like, I don't even know. And one of them is actually a police officer right now in Culver City. And it's like, and I feel like, are they doing that to show so that we won't do anything or we won't say anything? Or is it going to stick? And he should actually get realistic time. Like, I don't think, you know.
Right.
You think so too, Raven? You think so? We'll be honoring another father for the I Am King scholarship.
Okay.
And I'm going to be putting one of the fathers that was awarded in October on my board.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I'm really excited about that event as well. And that's September 4th. That's in Altadena at Loma Alta Park, which is a park my dad grew up in. And he also helped that park, too.
Okay.
So I'm really excited about that, too.
Okay, definitely.
You know, so yeah.
But yeah, I really do thank you so much.
No, and thank you, guys. It was an honor to be here. Seriously. It really was.
Like this episode?
Leave a review and stay up to date on new episodes by subscribing to Sloss and Girl Speaks. And follow Sloss and Girl on Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook.